If you are new here today, please fill out a visitor card available in the lobby to learn more about us. After the service, light refreshments will be served in a community room down the hall. Please join us. News of this week's events can be found in our weekly e-blast. For those of you who need to be in a quiet place but want to hear the service, you are welcome to go to the East Room, which is out the rear door and to the right. This week's Share the Plate recipient for May is New Jersey Friends of Clearwater, which is the branch of Maine Clearwater Group founded 40 years ago by Pete Seeger, whose mission was to clean up the very polluted Hudson River through music, word, and action. A seed from that endeavor took root in the form of the Monmouth County Friends of Clearwater when former UUCMC member Bob Killian brought the idea to Monmouth County. Through a discussion with our former minister, Harold Dean, right here in our meeting house. They are very dependent on donations. Ours will be put to good use as they continue with their environmental education programs. Before our service begins, please turn to those sitting near you and welcome one another to this beloved community.
Good morning. We have one additional announcement. The RE committee needs community members to lead STEAMY service summer activities for this summer. Whew. Not sure what STEAM activities can look like. You can make exploding pop rockets, create fireworks in a jar, blow up a batch of magic balloons, make ordinary flowers glow in the dark, pour a rainbow in a jar. Doesn't this sound fun? And these are just a few of the many STEAM activities that are out there that you can find thousands on the internet to use this summer. Sari's going to be walking around in coffee hour asking if you'd like to sign up to learn more and to lead one of these kids' activities this summer. Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle. Please turn off your cell phone as we now enter into this time of reflection and celebration. Welcome again to this place of love and hope.
Good morning, and good happy Mother's Day. This Unitarian Universalist congregation is a balm, a healing place for broken hearts. It is a beacon for those in need of hope. We are a laboratory for the human soul, always striving to be wiser and braver and somewhat more compassionate today than we were yesterday. While we come to this place to renew our spirits, we also recognize that our spiritual development doesn't happen without some discomfort and being challenged. Today is one of those Sundays when we enter brave space in service of our living tradition. It's a call to be a beloved community again. With humility and courage born of our history, we are called as Unitarian Universalists to build the beloved community where all souls are welcome as blessings, and the human family lives whole and reconciled. I'd like to invite up the children to light our chalice this morning. I know I have Em and Sophie as leaders, but all the kids, big, tall, small, everybody who's feeling brave today, you have to light this chalice for your moms, for the people who love you and nurture you and take wonderful care of you. Come on up. Can't do it until you're all here. We light this chalice with gratitude for the mothers and fathers who call us to be our best selves. May the chalice light show us the way to that dream of beloved community. May it be a light for our vision, our courage, and for deeper understanding. Thank you all. I just had to see your faces this morning. So good to have you here. You are all dancers now. Who knew? So I want to tell you a little bit about our white supremacy teach-in today. I've got some tips and I've got some traps. Everything about today's service, the Sunday morning dialogue, and our RE program is curriculum for this activity of learning about what the depths of white supremacy are. We're just one of 690 congregations out of 1,000 that are all around the world that have stopped business as usual to do this work. Today we're looking within to the often invisible aspects of white supremacy that fuel racism and the painful experiences of people of color in Unitarian Universalism and in our world. So we're not alone. There are tens of thousands of us, and we are responding to a call for action from a growing network of UUs of color and white UUs working together to look critically at ourselves, at our institutions, our hiring practices, how power is shared or not, cultural habits, all the ways that racism, sexism, and white supremacy still live. We believe that with the hundreds of UU churches doing this work together, we are going to be ready to take on racism seriously, especially within our own walls, and push our faith toward the beloved community we seek. So what is white supremacy? First of all, it's important to know that it's a system. It's different than the white supremacist that we think of, like someone, a KKK or a white nationalist, a person who's openly avowing white supremacist views. But white supremacy is a system. It's a system that prioritizes whiteness regardless of the presence or absence of racial hatred. When we call someone a white supremacist, we mean a person who embraces that overt racism. But white supremacy has a covert side, not just that overt side. It includes things like hiring discrimination and mass incarceration and police brutality to black bodies, paternalism, Eurocentric curriculum, housing discrimination, fear of people of color, and blaming the victim, and so many other things. It is true that we are caught up in this system if you live in the United States in 2017. It is the water we're swimming in, and so hard to see how white privilege is privileged and color, people of color are getting less than, being heard less, being respected less. They are still feeling the trauma of hundreds of years of slavery and economic disenfranchisement. In this system, their pain is ignored and invisible. Our teaching today is another step on the journey we are on together to create wholeness for all of us. So here's a few tips if you happen to be white in this system. Seek out and listen to the stories and experiences of people of color, and try not to dismiss them because they make you feel uncomfortable, or perhaps you've made a mistake and done something wrong. Stay in the relationship, admit you made a mistake, and try again. Try on new perspectives on the problem instead of defending the old one, and try to approach this hard work with curiosity and humility. And there's a big trap for those of us who are white. It's called white fragility. White fragility was coined by Dr. Robin DiAngelo, and it's a term that means something like it's a state in which even a minimum amount of racial stress becomes intolerable, triggering a range of defensive moves. These moves include the outward display of emotions such as anger, fear, or guilt, and behaviors such as argumentation, silence, and leaving the stress-inducing situation. These behaviors, in turn, function to reinstate the white supremacist racial equilibrium. So when our judgment of ourselves as good moral, trying to get it right, progressive people is challenged, you sometimes see those kind of behaviors appear. The advice that I like the best is says, try to be real and give up trying to be good. Now, for people of color, I want to say that I'm glad you are here. I'm trying to uncover something I can only catch glimpses of in my own white bubble. I want to thank you for helping me see and for bravely sharing your experiences. If these conversations stir up more pain for you, we will understand if you need to step out. And I hope we can create some safe and brave space together. This teaching day started with this morning's dialogue, as I said earlier, with Amy and many others discussing microaggressions. Our preschool and third grade kids will be led by Sariel Burtis, and they'll be talking about diversity and explore skin color using multicultural crayons and pencils. And they're going to be meeting in room 6 and 7 today. Our 4th through 7th grade program will be led by Michelle, and they'll explore the multiple identities that we all hold and how these identities are represented in literature. And they're going to be meeting in the community room. Our coming-of-age class is going to be getting ready for their service next week. Our youth groups on Friday night had some really fabulous discussions about when they realized that what their race was and exploring the nature of privilege in their world. And all the rest of us, the adults who stay in this room today, you're taking a graduate course in challenging white supremacy. That means there will be homework. And now we're going to sing our children off to their programs. Go now in peace. And now we'll take this morning's offering to share with New Jersey Friends of Clearwater. Later in the service, I'll be telling you about a special collection that we'll take at the end of the service for Mama's Bailout. But right now, it's for Clearwater and UUCMC. Thank you for your generosity.
I'm reading this for Renee Moore. She is largely self-educated on the issues of race, culture, American history, and the lasting impact of slavery. When she called and asked me to read this for her because she couldn't be here today, I was honored. We met during coffee hour, and within a few minutes, I felt like we were soul sisters. When I read this, I understood why. So here goes. It is my belief that any continued dialogue on race, white supremacy, neoliberalism must first begin with a basic understanding that race is a social construct, that race is largely a myth, and that we are all African, and that racism was constructed on this continent largely to support the financial institution of slavery. This understanding and acknowledgement sets the stage for constructive dialogue rather than just another massaging of the same old conversation. Instead of looking for ways to explain that wrong, we need to look for ways to understand the problem. What has caused the problem and why we let it go on for so long? We also need to ask why so many have stayed quiet, avoided it, or believe that the problem of race has gone. Yes, we need dialogue, but we need dialogue well done, not just any conversation. The UU congregation is probably one of the few that even dares to embark on what may develop into real constructive conversation. While UU can be proud of that legacy, it is also a realization that our society and religious institutions largely shy away from honest dialogues, even more than those centered around LGBTQ. UU congregations can be a safe environment for open, honest, brave conversation about race, if structured. Terminology used, for instance, minority, and the full understanding by participants that when Black folks speak, they speak from a place of experience and knowledge and should be listened to. For instance, if you have never been a giraffe, you cannot know what it is like to live as a giraffe and should therefore listen and learn when the giraffe speaks. When dialogue is done well, the possibilities are endless. Stereotypes can be dissolved, mistrust can be lessened, and mutual understanding and new common ground, perspectives, and insight can be gained. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. I will read this for sake of time, but I will try to explain some areas. But here it goes. Not too long ago, I went to Outback in Route 35. It was a weekday around 4:30. The place was near empty. The waiters and the bartenders were chit-chatting around the bar. And because I was eating by myself, I requested to be seated at a booth near the bar area. I looked at the menu for a while. I made up my mind about what I want to order, and I waited. The waiters were texting and talking, and I was still waiting. I waited some more, maybe another 10 minutes. I looked up at the same time that a white family was coming up and sat at the bar area. The waiters looked up, finished their conversation, and one of them went and took their order. Nobody came to my table. I stood up, and as I started walking out, I talked to the manager. Her answer was that the bar area was closed at the time I was sitting at. I shake my head. I'm still shaking my head. This can happen any day for me and for any other color people. And it happens to every of my friends that I know. You cannot avoid it. Racism is an everyday occurrence that unless you are in the receiving end, you are not able to conceive how often and subtle it is. Stacy and I have been friends since college. She was a history major, and we studied at Westchester University for a minute. A couple of years ago, she introduced me to her fiancé, an older Jewish guy. Very nice, very well educated. They had just came back from a trip to Spain. At the time of their visit to Spain, it was religious festivities, you know, where they got all the processions and all that big old parades and so forth. And as they were telling me, I asked them, were you able to see the hooded orders of the Catholic Church parading? The guy jumped out of his seat. How you know that? I did not know that word knowledge was exclusive to some people. I looked at my friend. I looked at him. I didn't say nothing. I know he did not mean to offend, but his assumptions were offensive, okay? Worst of all, it was automatic. There was not a beat. He didn't skip a beat. How you know that? How do I know that? Really? Okay. What I want you to take from these experiences is that we color people, we have to prove ourselves over and over to be validated in society. And just for being a different color, we are open to hurtful comments that are completely uncalled for. I'm just hoping that one day we don't even have to think about this no more, because I too have a dream.
Good morning. Happy Mother's Day. All right, so I'm a native Red Banker, and my family has been here for four generations. So I could tell you about my family moving to the east side of Red Bank, being the first African-American family to do so, and the Ku Klux Klan burning down the foundation of the house and placing crosses on the lawns, which is how our neighbors greeted us. Or I could tell you about the fact that we live on the corner of Harrison Avenue and John Street. And as a little girl growing up, I always wondered, why were there no brown people ever living on John Street? Until this day, that's true. And then I found out from a realtor friend of ours who is of mixed race heritage, and phenotypically, though, she appears European. And when she would be with her other colleagues, she would hear them talking about people of different races and realtors saying, and remember, we never show African-American families or Latina families or Indian families or any of those other folks homes on John Street. So by design, it's been kept an all-white neighborhood. And it was interesting, she decided to remain secretive about her racial heritage because she could be that fly on the wall. What did they really think about us? So, but I'm not going to talk about any of those things or any of those stories, but what I am going to talk about is a little bit about a boxing match. My dad, a boxer, taught me how to box. His little adventurous girls, you know, keep your arm up and, you know, be able to throw that jab. He used to stand me up against the back of a wall, you know, bam. And he said, but baby, remember, your opponent is going to be bigger than you, probably going to be male. So what you want, and it's not likely that you're going to throw the knockout punch. So he would tell me, but what you want to do is get those body punches in, get tap the arms. And after a while, the person is too tired. They can't lift up their arms. They can't block anymore. So good strategy for, since my opponents were likely going to be bigger than me and could overpower me by weight and size and arm reach. So fast forward. Nowhere has the experience of institutional racism hit me more than my experience being a mother of an African-American son. So in going to one of the most prestigious universities in the world, he used to be taunted and jeered and teased about, well, dude, you must be here on one of them athletic scholarships. He wasn't. He was there on an academic scholarship. He eventually left that place, tired of struggling in what is supposed to be a bastion of liberal intellectualism. Nowhere has it struck me more than as recently as this past Christmas when we were in New York City as a family going to see a holiday show when my son went to go pick up the car. Police officer stopped him and wouldn't let him get in the car and made him show identification and then asked him if he had seen another African-American that they thought was causing trouble in the area. And we waited and waited and waited. They held him in the street for almost 45 minutes. And then to get a text from my son on New Year's Eve when he was in a local popular place in Belmar, and I get the text, Mom, they won't let me in. So New Year's Eve, here he was with his friends, all dressed up, hoping to have a good time, so excited, so eager to go and celebrate the incoming of 2017 with his friends, and to be the one that couldn't get in, to be disallowed. I have to tell you, my arms are heavy.
Good morning. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers and those that took the mothering role. So by definition, we learned that white supremacy means the belief that white people are superior to those of all other races. But what does it mean to a Puerto Rican Colombian born in the Bronx and raised in South Patterson? Well, it means a relative asking me if the dark-skinned guy that I was dating had good hair because you don't want to dañar la raza or ruin the race. It means anticipating having someone tell you you're in America and in America we speak English when you're trying to tell that funny joke in Spanish that doesn't translate in English. It always gets lost in translation. It also means not having proper representation in the media. People of color always are uneducated, violent, promiscuous, we're maids, we're drug dealers. We play many roles other than that. We're very educated. We're teachers, we're mothers, we're daughters, we're husbands, we're everything. We're not all negative. White supremacy also means appropriation of the in double standards. Cornrows have been around forever. And just recently, they've been renamed boxer braids since Kim Kardashian wore them. And now they're the biggest trend in Hollywood. But they were frowned upon when a young black girl wore it in high school. So those of us that deal with subtle and not so subtle acts of xenophobia, it feels like disbelief that someone just said that or someone just did that. It feels like fear, anger, exhaustion. It feels like a never-ending journey. But since we're talking about the topic, I guess we're all tired of those feelings as well. And I just want to thank you all and be open to listening to our stories, because we all have plenty of stories, and there are probably stories we just can't remember at the top of our heads because it happens so often. So when we tell our story, just listen and have an open mind and just ask questions, you know, and just be honest about those questions. Thank you.
How's it going? How you feeling so far? Are you feeling challenged yet? Be honest. I know I'm sitting with the discomfort of these shared experiences, knowing they are just the tip of the iceberg, and that I have certainly contributed to the pain of my siblings of color. Yes, it was unwittingly and unconsciously, but no more. I have all kinds of reasons why I would rather not know about this. But my faith calls me to stick with it and learn and grow anyway. Our task as Unitarian Universalists in this moment in time is one of recentering. Recentering away from the dominant white culture that is an undeniable part of our history, and centering ourselves instead with the voices and experiences of those who have been marginalized. This faith is bigger than any one person's experience of it. It's bigger than the way too long name of it, and bigger than our frequent failure to live up to its promise of love and justice. Our Unitarian Universalist faith is rooted in this system of white supremacy. The culture, the practices, even the wealth of our congregations is swimming in those unholy waters. It's part of our past, but it doesn't have to be a part of our future if we are willing to do this work. The gift of this time is that a great shift is happening everywhere. The demographics of the United States is shifting away from being a majority white population. That's a fact. It's happening. The demographics of Unitarian Universalist congregations, of our ministers and other religious professionals is shifting too. It's been slow and incremental, but there is now a critical mass of religious professionals of color in our movement. And they are asking us to look at our institutions and to challenge that system of white supremacy where it lingers still. The precipitating event was a critique of the UUA's hiring practices, especially in senior management positions. But that impulse should serve to spur us on to a deeper awareness of these systems that we've been wrestling with for a long time. And there are wounds and there are bruises, real ones, from all forms of dominant culture that goes unexamined. It's been a long time now since I worked as a potter, but I remember how critical the centering of the clay on the potter's wheel was to the final outcome of the pot. It took physical strength to contain that ball of clay, pressing in and down over the fast-spinning wheel to make sure the clay was all spinning together and in the same direction. Fully compressed, without any air pockets, without any wobble in it at all. When centered, it would seem as if the clay was perfectly still, in spite of spinning at the highest speed of the wheel. If the pot you want to make is going to be symmetrical, that precise and powerful centering is the first and most critical step. Both the potter and the clay, when the work is done, when it is centered, become perfectly still. The creation, as it develops, if it is not centered, will swing in ever wider ellipses off center and ultimately collapse. So centering ourselves is everything. In faith communities and in pottery, the question is always, where are we centered? If we are centered still in this all-white experience, culture, and assumptions, the institutions we create and maintain will be that wobbly and unstable. I know that a white-centered community is not the beloved community I want to be a part of creating. So seeing the system still at work is troubling, but it's also a gift. The gift is in seeing with new eyes what was there all along. We who are white can thank our colleagues of color for this gift today. And so it is time to recenter ourselves. This recentering gives me wild hope that our dream of multicultural, pluralistic community is really possible. If we can recenter ourselves to this vision, one that does not assume white, cisgender, able-bodied, male dominance, etc., as the norm to which all else must conform to fit in, it gives real hope for our movement. So how are we going to do this recentering? The strength to move beyond our fragile egos is needed. Curiosity and humility are great qualities to embody on this journey too. The UUA, the Unitarian Universalist Association, is in the process of creating a commission whose first task is to listen to the stories of people of color in our movement. I know there will be many more than what we heard today. This teach-in is one part of the response to unaddressed problems of racism. Staying awake and open to new understanding, it's hard, but it is essential. Seeing the possibility for spiritual growth and the pain and discomfort will help. And thinking like a system, instead of blaming individuals, is also a way to view the issues that will help us stay in the work while we live together day after day. Remembering that it's not about you, but we need you to make it. We have choices about how to respond and choices about how to create that beautiful, beloved multicultural community we dream of. That's what this particular disruption is leading us toward. The terrible history of genocide, land seizure, slavery, and indentured servitude of our country against people of color has left scars and trauma that has not yet healed. The many ways that people of color are treated as inferior lives on in our institutions even when we truly feel no more racial animosity. That's how we know we've come to the covert side of that spectrum of white supremacy. This is how we know we are in the white supremacist swim. Look around and pay attention to times when white supremacy culture, especially those covert ones, is creeping into our community. Learn the history so that we do not repeat it. This week, I'm going to be sharing a link of a video of a recent lecture about the history of people of color in Unitarian Universalism by Mark Morrison Reed. It's going to be in the upcoming eBlast. It is well worth your time to watch and become more grounded in the part of our history that was rendered invisible until recently. So that's one piece of homework for you. But there's more. Remember, this is a graduate level teach-in, so research is expected. So learn more about our history, watch that video, and then listen to Black and Brown experiences a lot, whether in person, on Facebook, in print, in movies, etc. Listen to what folks are saying. Look around for the ways we often assume white dominance and culture is the norm. There's a million ways we can look around, even in just this room. But one that comes to mind is our beautiful, beloved Earth Window. We love that. It's a symbol of who we are as a congregation. But the artist chose to center the United States and not Africa or some other angle of a globe that has many different angles. So as much as I love that symbol, I want it to spin. I want it to turn. I don't know what artist is going to make that happen, but they're just everywhere. Another example was last Sunday's music program. Louise and the choir knocked it out of the park with Frostiana, and Louise was conscious enough to make sure that the other pieces of the service were by people of color. The stories, the poems, the readings, so that the white-authored Frostiana was balanced. And so the whole would speak, hopefully, on some level to everyone. What other examples of this system are we going to find in our own congregation? We are on a hunt to find the hidden assumptions about power and whose rules and behaviors are the unspoken norms. You didn't do this today, but sometimes this congregation is very reticent about clapping, reticent about sharing emotion and singing, and even reticent about talking back to the preacher in the middle of the sermon. That's something that would happen in a non-white culture. I'd get an amen every once in a while. Thank you. So that's your homework. Look and listen this week. And then I want you to return here with your experiences, what you have observed and felt. And we're going to have small circle conversations during coffee hour. Hopefully we'll just get into small groups in the different classrooms around noon next week. So come hear the coming of age folks, and then let's sit and talk about what we see and what we feel. I want to also say that if they choose, one of those groups will be a caucus for people of color to have their own conversation. So what is the goal? Chris Crass said it this way. Our goal is to join our hearts and minds to the task of destroying white supremacy in every worldview, policy, law, institution, and governing body of our society. For our faith communities to be places of healing from the nightmare of racism that haunts people of color and white people. For our faith communities to be places of nourishment, sustaining the multiracial struggles of our people to advance economic, racial, and gender justice. For our faith communities to be part of the continual process of working within the movement as part of the journey to end oppression in society. For our faith communities to raise our children of all backgrounds to be freedom fighters and practitioners of liberation values. Our goal is for our faith communities to be spiritually alive, to learn from and contribute to liberation cultures and legacies, for our faith communities to be welcoming homes for people of all colors, sexualities, classes, ages, abilities, genders, and citizenship statuses, for our faith communities to regularly invite us into and prepare us for the courageous action for collective liberation held in loving community for the long haul. This is the centering that will cause us to save a world worth saving. Let us be centered in the beauty and goodness within each heart that beats with life and love. Let us be centered within a vision of community where Black lives and voices and experiences really do matter. Let us be centered not just in trying to be good people, but in being real people, fallible and yet forgivable and forgiving, extending our hands to lift up one another. Let us be centered in power that is shared and abundant. Let us be centered in celebration and in hope. May we make it so. Can I now get an amen?
Amen.
All right. And say a prayer. All of us need all of us to make it. Unitarian Universalists believe that all of us need all of us to make it. This is why we are in solidarity with the movement for Black lives today and every day. This is why we come together to remind ourselves of what really matters and to live in the holy place of learning and praying that all of us need all of us to make it. Amen.
Now please rise in body or spirit, and we'll sing number 151. I wish I knew how it would feel to be free.